You're listening to 247 Real Talk. This is your host, Julian Perry. Welcome back to the 247 Real Talk podcast. For this episode, I'll be providing my second installment in a series I created called In the News, where I share my thoughts, perspectives on various headline news and breaking news stories. I'll be right back. So good evening to everyone. Hello. Welcome to 247 Real Talk Podcast. It is Wednesday, September 8th, about 4 minutes after 11 on Eastern Standard Time. And as you may hear, my voice is a little less than it usually is. Strange thing, since I moved out to my new home, there's a lot of foliage, you know, a lot of trees, a lot of wildlife too, a lot of bugs, a whole lot of things. And one of the things I've found this summer is I've had the most severe allergy attacks that I can remember. Today my chest kind of felt like it closed up, and I lost my voice for a few hours, and then it cleared up after I took some allergy medication and got a little bit of rest. So not wanting to disappoint, I made sure that I came on the air and record another episode of 247 Real Talk. So In the News is a segment I created that basically deals with things that I just pull out the top of my headlines, or hot topics, or things I feel passionate about and I want to have a little discussion on. So it won't be that long of a podcast as the usual episodes, but nevertheless, here we go. So I want to start off with Afghanistan. And the reason I want to spend a little bit of time in Afghanistan is reflecting on a conversation I had in my previous episode with Mr. Larry Sharp, who is the 2018 Libertarian gubernatorial candidate. He got some decent support for a third party. And, you know, he had various opinions on things like Afghanistan and student loans, two of the things I'm going to cover again today. You've probably heard me cover student loans several times, and I'm going to continue to cover that as I expand my thoughts, as I get more input from others, and as I feel that every episode is an opportunity for someone, you know, eventually to listen. Hopefully, you know, if we dream big enough, someone in the Biden administration who can do something about it hears this and has a brainwave, you know, has a brainstorm. So let's go to Afghanistan. And I just wanted to reiterate my position on that, you know. And I want people to think about it, because it seems like everyone has to have this critical position, right or left. And, you know, speaking to a libertarian candidate, a third party, who, you know, is obviously far behind the other two parties, but wants a chance, okay. Not that it will, you know, that he could be any different, or we don't know because he's never been given the chance. But the fact is that when you're in a position where you're the underdog and you realize that you need to convince, you know, more people than almost seems plausible at the time, then I think you dig deeper to find solutions. And many times you find solutions that the top candidates won't make, you know, or won't think of or won't implement, because they're too busy, you know, pleasing their party, their constituents, in a manner that, you know, keeps them in office and is not about doing the right thing. So with the Afghanistan situation, you know, if we really look at the history of it, you know, especially recent history, President Obama wanted to get out, and he couldn't. He didn't, because I guess, you know, he chose not to fight that battle. And the battle that you fight in those political positions is always tied to money. As per my discussion with Mr. Larry Sharp, you know, there's a lot of money that many people make in going into war zones in different roles. And the longer the war, the longer the conflict, the longer the American presence, the more money they make. Money that they could never have dreamed of had that situation not, you know, presented itself. And you know, that money always seems to rule everything in the bigger picture of the life that we try to live, even though we try to use so many other values that are not relevant to money. I think that getting out was the right thing to do. This is my personal opinion. I don't want people to come jumping down my throat. You're entitled to your position. This is mine. I feel like 20 years in the country is ridiculous. I've spoken to, you know, Marines who were there who had personal attachments to people who helped them, and they're sort of, you know, they have that understanding of why, but they still have that connection. Then I spoke to people Marines who didn't have that connection with individuals over there. And their basic point to me was they feel like other than getting some stripes and some medals or whatever, that they accomplished nothing. And when you really think about it, you know, you can't put a gun to someone's head to change their ideology or their thinking. You know, we look at the Taliban that has now taken over Afghanistan. And, you know, as some of the fellows I discussed, you know, had this chat with or had these discussions with who were over there, they're like, you know, it's a good chance that a lot of that 300,000 army that they trained, Afghan army, there's a good chance that many of them, more than you can even think about, were Taliban. It was just an easy way of survival, existence, maybe even infiltration, or basically just waiting us out. And they knew they could wait us out because unless we decided to have the 100-year presence, their time would come. And I know there are a lot of innocent people in these societies who just want to live and grow, just like we want to do here in the United States of America. And I know that there are many ideologies there and their fights that they have that inhibit them or downright mandate that they can't do, live the way they want to. But I think that's a war that they or a battle that they have to fight internally. And even though they may reach for international help, it can't be just thousands of troops from the United States just going there. And then every so often we hear about a roadside bomb or this and that, and we just keep burying our sons and daughters and mothers and fathers. And somehow someone comes up, you know, every 4 years in the election and somehow keeps it going and says it's okay. So I think the bigger issue here is that even though there was no clean way to get out of there, it just seems like everyone, whether you have a lot of knowledge of what happened or not, that it appears messy to everyone. I don't know what would have been the repercussions of when they had discussions about withdrawing before they even announced it and went to the point where they had a deadline of, you know, of sort of immediately and initially pulling all the American citizens out that wanted, who wanted to leave. So that when we got to this point and we were, you know, pulling out the Afghans who wanted to escape, we at least made sure that the American citizens were not trapped in there as a sort of a bargaining chip that the Taliban would have. And then we could have done what we did, probably even brought more numbers out to wherever we were, you know, I mean, I don't know the refugee camps are any better than where they were, but obviously they felt so. So, you know, there are a lot of critics. There are a lot of supporters. I do think it was messy. Again, that's just a personal opinion. I am not aware of every single detail. And a lot of times we have opinions from the outside and there's a lot of things that go on in politics that we don't know anything about. So from what I know and from how it went down and how it's still going down, even though we left based on the deadline that was, I guess at the end was mandated by the Taliban, it's still messy because everyone is still not home. not sure how people got stuck, not sure why people got stuck. And you have to understand, too, there may be Americans over there who, when they had the opportunity to leave, they did not. And don't let's, you know, throw that under the rug or something, or ask crazy questions from this side of the world, like, why would they do that? Because that's human nature. Don't we see people who listen to the news reports and they hear a hurricane and, you know, is coming and it's going to wipe out the area and they choose to stay? People do that in earthquakes. People do that in hurricanes. People do that in tsunamis. People make decisions based on things that we can't understand. And then what happens? Always happens. When the hurricane or the tsunami or whatever comes is a reality and the forecast was correct, then they're screaming for where they are, calling for someone to rescue them. So maybe that represents some population who's left. I don't know. I'm just saying. So I want to move on from Afghanistan. Like I said, this will not be a really long podcast, but I'm going to move on to Afghanistan. I'm going to stay with part of the conversation I have with Mr. Larry Sharp again. And I want to talk just a little bit more about student loans. And that can segue me into my next thought after student loans. And I'm coming back to student loans, not necessarily saying the same thing I've said over and over again, albeit that I would say it 100 times if someone would listen just once. But Mr. Sharp came up with an interesting idea, again, coming from a third party, needing to be, you know, being forced to think outside the box and not just give us a status quo like we've been dealing with, you know, administration after administration. And he said, look, the Biden administration promised to do something about student loans. The Biden administration has, in terms of Democrats, has, you know, some big shoes to fill because, like it or not, you know, President Obama said he would do something about health care. And what he did was unprecedented, whether you like it or not. It was a challenge that many presidents talked about, you know, refused to take on or tried to take on and fail, health care. And now we have student loans. And I think that, and I'm hearing from a lot of people, and don't get me wrong, I don't speak this from just listening to people. I have my own challenges with student loans too. So I am speaking, I am included in this bunch. I want to make that clear. I'm not being selfish about it. I hear tons of stories about it. I think anyone who speaks to anyone who has a student loan will hear the same, you know, pain and the same worry in their voice. But here we are, what's, I don't know how long this, March, or so what, 17 months or whatever into a pandemic. We're sort of emerging, and that's something we'll talk about a little bit too in a while, because that there's a whole other political and level to that. That's, again, I think using human beings as pawns and as tests, as crash test dummies, so to speak. But what Mr. Sharp said was, look, this is an epidemic in the United States, and coming out of the pandemic and beyond the pandemic, people are going to lose their homes, things that they dreamed of, they worked of. They're going to, you know, their kids are going to lose what they thought was their safe haven. There are a lot of ramifications to having people suffer under student loans that can go well into a future, not only financially, but psychologically, et cetera. So he said, look, first thing the administration, Biden administration should do is forgive 50% of everyone's loan. Then allow them to renegotiate the terms of the remaining 50%. And then he says, well, you know, people who paid their student loans off, even though we're, you know, life evolves and things must change, let's sort of don't just leave them there and say, well, life evolves and things change, but let's give them some sort of give back, payback for being able to get through their student loans. So he says, give them some tax breaks. If you can prove it, you paid your student loans, which I think is easy enough to do, give them some tax breaks. But then he went on to, you know, go even further. And this is the essence of what my conversation is tonight about student loans. So you go to college. There are so many colleges across the United States, Ivy League colleges, and you can rate them in different tiers. Okay, we get in because of various qualification needs or reasons or test scores or whatever. But the point is, and the point he was making was, instead of having the federal government guarantee the loans, make the enrollment in colleges mandatory that they offer the similar type of loan and let the college hold the note. Now, the reason that you say that is you're not trying to punish the college and put it out of business. And maybe on the back end, there could be some sort of support from the federal government should they run into certain cases that are that fall into that category. But basically you're saying if the college is holding the note, if them getting paid rests solely on the value of the degree that you get, then the whole system will change in favor of the student, in favor of producing well-qualified students. And part of their program should be a whole department in each college that deals with a job placement program where they interact with employers geographically, you know, and say, look, we have this class of company coming out. And don't get me wrong, the student must sort of meet certain criteria to keep that loan. So there should be a minimum GPA. And I think that minimum GPA should be relatively high. Because I think that if you're going to hold the colleges accountable, then you need to hold the students accountable. But the point I think he was getting to is, again, is we all come out of college, you have a degree, and it no longer makes sense, unless you have like MIT or Yale or one of these things, Cornell, one thing, it doesn't make sense to even say where your degree is from, because if it's not from one of those, people just brush it off. And I remember the days when you would go and you would take it, you would get a bachelor's degree. And when you came out with your bachelor's degree, it was a huge deal. These days, a bachelor's degree is like high school. You've got to go beyond, if that's your intention, you've got to go beyond to get to a certain salary level. But regardless of, if you graduate with an associate in applied sciences, whatever that cost of that degree is, there should be some sort of relationship to the job placement and the ability to repay that loan. Same thing with bachelor's degree, same thing with master's degree, so that these colleges would know now that we can't just, there's no longer a mill, you know, where just people in, people out, make our money, get the money from the federal government, bye-bye to the students, you're out there on your own, I don't care, you got a degree, it says bachelor's, have a good life, okay? And it would probably reduce the amount of low-level, I'm going to call them, colleges and universities that just pop up that have become so great at running this scheme, knowing that they're getting this guaranteed money from the federal government, knowing they're going to make their money and get paid, and knowing they can walk away and leave the student with the burden and have no liability. Just as we fixed healthcare, or we made a huge effort towards healthcare for all, just as the Biden administration, and again, I want to give credit, and I didn't say this before, so let me make sure I give credit. Obama wanted to get out of Afghanistan. President Trump made a decision to get out of Afghanistan as well. So this crosses party lines, getting out of Afghanistan. And relieving American citizens of student loan debt should cross party lines. And I believe to a certain extent it does, because President Trump is the one who paused the payments. And now the Biden administration, and they did something the other day, which I thought, again, is another fumbling move. Simply because we're in the middle of a pandemic, we don't really know. I don't care what anybody says. No one knows what's next with this pandemic. No one. I don't care. CDC, who used it. No one knows what's next. We're all waiting and watching. And while we're doing that, we're risking our lives. So if this pandemic, all of a sudden, the Delta variant, whatever, or another variant after, becomes so serious that we have to take drastic measures again, what, and people start losing their jobs and companies start closing down, this unemployment goes up, what do you do come January 31st, where the White House came out and said, this is when your student loans will restart and we will not be postponing it again? Now, saying that this is when the projected date for when student loans will restart, they have the right to do that. Saying that you will not postpone it again with all the unknowns, to me, it's just another, you know, amateur night at the Apollo. This is not what administrations who understand the dynamics, not only of the pandemic, but of human life and nature, should be saying. And so I want you to understand when you hear me, I'm critical of everybody. If I had a choice and didn't have to, you know, I would be the fourth party. I'd be involved with none of them, because I think that I'm tired of us being aligned with Republican or Democrat and electing leaders who make all these big promises. And then they go in there and they do what the heck they want. And then we don't get the results that we want. And then we come up to another election and now we're forced to go, well, either we go with this candidate, because that's our only two choices. And so we reluctantly vote someone backing with this hope that's gone decades, probably centuries, you know, this hope that has gone where, oh, when I elect a leader, hopefully if they get reelected, maybe the next time they'll throw me a bone. Maybe the next time they'll do something that will impact my life in a positive way. That it's given me something that I was looking for. So, you know, my podcast gets shared all over the place and I'm not sure who it reaches. And I'm always happy when it reaches new ears and I get feedback and you know, I have got criticism of times. I got a few critical remarks on my BLM early episodes or whatever. But my point is, maybe somebody can get this to someone in the Biden administration to listen. Listen to the concept of forgiving 50% of the student loans, allowing the people to renegotiate the terms of the remaining 50%, and then going forward, take the burden of the guarantee student loans off the federal government by putting it on the schools, making sure now that the criteria is set so these colleges and universities are making sure that whatever they charge and whatever debt they leave the student with makes sense for the level of degree they get and the usability and the earning ability of the degree they provide. And then making sure that they have a job placement unit, a job placement division within each school that can at least, to a certain extent, satisfy certain criteria, stringent criteria, on helping people to get placement that allows them to pay back the student loan. Now, for the anomalies, the people who are lazy, who don't want to work, who get fired, that's a different story. But right now, if you had the money to start a university, especially since many are online, and you can get the right requirements so that students can get guaranteed student loans, federal student loans at your university, it's a cash cow without any ramifications on the end. Because whatever you teach them with or whatever you graduate, you know, and think about it for a second. Is the Yale GPA and some common no-name university GPA, even though they may both be 4.0, 3.0, you know, different levels, are they equal? No, they're not. Because the student, for instance, who gets a 4.0 at MIT has a whole different level from another run-of-the-mill college that might not charge MIT money, but they charge a whole lot more than their degree is worth. And people normally go to these universities not because they don't want to attend a better university, but because the universities also play the game of their entrance criteria to trap you. It's like a credit card. Yay, come sign up. 0% interest for 21 months. This, that, the other. The X amount of points if you buy this and you buy that. You know, it's like crazy. I mean, I know I'm digressing a bit, but think about it for a second. Have you ever gotten these emails or these letters that says, hey, you have available credit. Here's what you can do. Why are you sending me a letter telling me I have available credit when, you know, maybe I have a $5,000 limit. I've spent $2,000 already. I might be struggling to pay the payments. You're just enticing me, just drawing me in, just giving me all the reasons that I should spend more money because you're saying it makes financial sense. And yes, we are responsible for each other, but there's things like entrapment. And that's what many of these companies do. And that's what these schools do. So if anyone in the Biden administration is listening, or if anyone on my podcast knows someone, if they don't want to listen to the whole podcast, that's fine. Just let me listen to this piece about student loans. I'll say it one more time. Forgive 50% of the student loans across the board. Allow people to renegotiate their remaining balance under the same length of time terms. So that'll help people, obviously, because they reduce their payments by half. And then look to change the system and put the burden of the guaranteed loan on the university or college. Either way, come January 31st, 2022, there will be an epidemic if something is not done. And the fact of the matter is, I will call out our president because part of his promise was to deal with student loans. Obama said he would deal with healthcare, and he did. There are even things that Trump said he would deal with, and he did. And now it's the Biden administration's turn to do so. And you know, they should really, really think about it because, and give me a second here, as I go through the news and I pull up some of the things, one of the headlines that says, Biden approval rating is down in 6 critical swing state polls. And some of the things that they're talking about, you know, why it's down by more than 10 points. They pull out in Afghanistan, which I said was really messy. The resurgence of COVID cases. So let's talk a little bit about the resurgence of COVID cases because it ties into the rest of my episode. The fact of the matter is that many things and politics sort of get married in this game of politics. But one of the things that you can't do is health and politics. People and politics in terms of their livelihood, because the result is usually catastrophic. And the reason I referenced Larry Sharp in the beginning and the libertarian point of view is that I'm not a member of a libertarian party, so you know, put that out of your head. I'm not speaking from that perspective. I'm simply saying that what I enjoyed about speaking to Mr. Sharp was the way he was thinking outside the box, where he, because of his circumstance of trying to emerge and break this stereotype, break this longstanding historical, I don't know what the adjective is of these two parties, is that they're forced to come up with real solutions, powerful answers, things that make people think beyond the two parties, the two reigning parties, Democrat and Republican. And this is what we elect officials, elect, you know, our leaders for. If everybody thought the same way, we wouldn't need them. We elect them because we feel that they have a certain skill set and ability to think even beyond us and to come up with solutions collectively that are better for all American people. This is not an argument about who thinks COVID is a hoax and whatever. And for the record, I had COVID, so I'm not one of those. I know it's real. But the point I'm making is this. We are sending people back to death traps. In other words, we talked about herd immunity. We are talking about herd infection. We're sending people back to workplaces. We send people, especially government institutions, and we're sending them back because the wherever the offices are located, those large number of civil servants are a big part of this the income for the businesses in that community. I get it. No customers, no business. You struggle. No business, you got to lay off employees. It is a ripple effect. And as I said on many podcasts, I am not sitting here having this conversation with you and saying that I have the answers. I am saying that we elect officials to come together, to put their brain power together and come up with answers that not only are solutions and not only provide solutions, but keep us safe. There is no one. No, I have two young kids that in their early years, they dealt with a lot of major challenges with respiratory illnesses, something called RSV at one point. I've spent times in the emergency rooms where I sat in the emergency room for 36 hours holding my child as they struggled to breathe. I've spoken about this. I've told this story more than once on my podcast. Watching the machine and it's going down to 70-something% oxygen. Watching this child wrapped in a blanket, you know, really tight where he's immobile because they can't keep the IV in. And they got a splint on his hands, keeping his hand straight. And they got, you know, and they have to do this so that they can force that oxygen mask. Because children, you know, don't take to that kind of restriction and that kind of pain unless you, you know, unless you force them to, and that's how they do it. And you have to stand there as a helpless parent and watch your child. And I say all this to say, now I am being forced back to work, to my 9-to-5. And if I go in there and I come home with something, Delta or otherwise, because I'm being forced back into an environment, and what I heard the other day in conversations with my job is, you have to wear, even if you're vaccinated or not, but you know, even vaccinated people have to wear your mask all day. That's a problem, first of all. I've worn a mask at different scenarios. I've never worn a mask for 7 or 8 hours straight. Oh, you can take it off when you're eating or whatever. But we eat in environments where there are dozens of other people. People sneeze, people cough. Sometimes they do it, you know, because it comes all of a sudden and they weren't prepared to block their mouth or their nose. There is no vaccination for children, I think it's under 12, which my kids are. So you put me in a situation where I could come home as a vaccinated person and I could possibly bring whatever new variant or the Delta variant back to my home. And we've seen that it's mutating, it's evolving, it's a super bug, it's smart. So then you have to tell me what to do when my kids get sick. And if it, you know, and God forbid, because I pray that never happens. But then this, it gets harder now because here you are as a parent with a sick child, and then the you know, these governments and these organizations and business, all these companies put rules around the amount of time you can take off to care for your family. And if you want to, you have the Family Leave Act, but you know, you only get X amount of percentage of your income or none at all. So how do you survive and pay your mortgage while you take care of your child? All for a problem that you didn't create. All for a problem that could have been prevented, but for the greed and the love of money. I challenge every single person who says that they're a leader, a politician, who steps up and outward to be a part of the solution, to come up with solutions. I don't know the answer. I'm just telling you, if you're elected to that position, you'd be paid by taxpayers' money. Put your heads together. Come up with a way where businesses can survive. New ventures can be launched to support those who could not survive under the old model while you keep people safe. I have to return to the office very shortly, and I am not someone who normally suffers from anxiety, but I'm suffering from severe anxiety of it. One, because I went through COVID. I went through difficulty breathing. Even though I didn't go through severe, difficult respiratory illness, I had 100 and some fevers, you know, for like 7 days, 100 and something degrees. And that in itself created certain respiratory issues. I dealt with pains, severe body pains, not only during those 7 or 8 days of COVID, of the severe part of COVID, but some 3-4 months later, I was taking medication for those pains. I have had surgery. I have gone through measles. I've gone through chickenpox, a whole lot of things like that. And I've never dealt with anything like COVID. And then to top it off, it is shown, it is proven, almost even in my own working environment, that more productivity, higher level productivity, was a result of teleworking. There are many companies out there that have gone 100% teleworking, and somehow the offices that they are, the businesses that they used to support, survived. So let's think about it for a second. Maybe the layout of businesses that of certain type of businesses, let's say the ones that do like the bodegas or the supermarket, whatever. Maybe they need to, a part of it needs to be government help to something like that for them to relocate. Because if people are now staying home more, they're shopping in their neighborhoods. So maybe that's part of the solution. Maybe you go where the masses are, will be once teleworking is in place, as opposed to bringing the masses to where the businesses already are and risking their lives. So I have to deal with wearing a mask 7-8 hours a day. As paranoid and as anxious as I am about COVID, I can imagine that my work days will be miserable and nowhere near as productive as they are today. And then I think about Florida. And I thought about Florida because today I saw where a judge, I think he overruled the governor there. And because the governor had banned mass mandates. And says Florida judge orders immediate lifting of DeSantis' ban on school mass mandates. Look, and I'm going to refer to Mr. Larry Sharp again. He made a lot of sense when he said, you know, vaccination mandates are not a good thing. And I thought about it for a while because I believe everybody should be vaccinated. I am. But I understood the point he was coming from, or place he was coming from. He was coming from a place of human nature. So if people, what he's basically saying, if people see people getting other people getting vaccinated and they're not getting the virus, then the inclination is to get vaccinated too. But they, as human beings, the minute someone tells us we have to do something, there's automatic resistance. And the resistance most of the time has nothing to do with the actual issue that caused, you know, the mandate. So a lot of these people are not, you know, I feel just because of human nature, not getting the vaccine for any other reason except the fact that they were told by government you have to. One, because they don't trust the government. Two, you know, historically, because of what government has done in the past, they don't trust them. And again, because they're being told you have to. But when it comes to something like Florida, and I looked up the statistics, and I think Florida had just over 46,000 deaths from COVID. And they are still one of the serious hotspots right now. I think unless something changed recently, their hospitals are bursting at the seams. They're fighting, you know, against these odds. A mask is not putting anything in your body. A mask is not an injection. A mask is not something that, you know, there's not something on the mask that's going to make you sick. Not everyone can wear a mask. I get that. But for the majority of us, I think we just shut up and put the stupid mask on. Hopefully, if enough of us listen, there will come a time when universally across the country, we can say, you can now take the mask off. My kids are going back to school tomorrow, their first day of school. They have to wear masks. I know my kids. It's not going to be easy for them. And I worry about it because I can see every chance they get, they're going to pull it down, especially the part over your nose. Because most of us can wear the part over our mouth, but it's the part over your nose that becomes the problem. The breathing becomes the problem. I think my son a few weeks ago had an ear infection, which is cleared up now, but it's hard for him to wear a mask all the time. And he wants to. But it's just hard. And we have children of all ages. We have children of, you know, that of 12 and under that there's no vaccination for, yet we're forcing them back to school. We have adults who need reasonable accommodations because of childcare and all sorts of things resulting out of COVID specifically, and we're forcing them back to work. You force them back to work, and yet every paycheck, the government takes a chunk of money for taxes, and the people who pay the most taxes, which we know is the lower and middle class, can't get the relief. We're not the filthy rich ones who own our own businesses or who can dictate that, you know, we're just going to stay teleworking because we can afford to do it because we're filthy rich and whatever. And everybody, I don't care what anybody says. I'm not going against filthy rich people. I'm just saying everybody can't be filthy rich. So we're still human beings. And we need to address issues like human beings. I don't know how many of you out there feel the same way I do, but I'm just tired of the politics. I'm tired of the lying. I'm tired of the games. I'm tired of someone looking at me in my face and telling me that I don't matter. I'm tired of someone using me as a pawn. If you really cared about people, then you have to care about people universally, not one set over the other. In which case, find a solution for the businesses in these areas where people end up, you know, teleworking more. Or, you know what? Let's meet halfway. At one point during the pandemic, we were working on hybrid mode, so to speak, where 50% of the staff went in every other week. So you only had, in any given week, you only had 50% of the staff in, which allowed for a lot more distancing. Because the other thing I heard in a meeting the other day was that we have to wear a mask, but we no longer have to observe social distancing. So I can get locked in an office in a meeting with 10 other people or a conference room sitting shoulder to shoulder because I have a mask. And then someone sneezes or coughs or whatever, and it just takes us, it's in the ear, and it just takes us something that causes me to have to pull my mask down, or it falls down for a second, whatever. And here we go. So even when you call people back to work, we have a lot of mechanisms that we were using very remote, that we can have meetings and stuff where we are and not have to crowd into conference rooms. But this, you know, I'm not sure what this urge is to get back to, you know, even beyond the businesses of people, you know, crowding themselves together in herds in these offices. You know, I hear people say all the time, human beings are social beings. Yes, I'm a social being, but I'm good with my social circle. I don't need to see all those people at work. I really don't. I just need to make my contribution, do my job, do it to the best of my ability, get paid for it. And I can do that without being there. There's only a small subset of people who actually have to be in the office, because look at the age we live in. Most of what we do are meetings and computerized. You can do that from anywhere in the world. There are people who work for companies all over the world, and the companies are free enough, are open-minded and forward-thinking enough to allow their employees to live anywhere in the world and still contribute. There's a website called FlexJobs. I'm going to give them a plug, flexjobs.com, where they offer flex jobs, incredible amount of, you know, if you can find the right one, remote jobs, where remote is actually that. You can live anywhere in the world. I've got a personal friend of mine that she lost her job at the beginning of the pandemic from a law office, and she got a new job that she loves, and it's 100% remote. And she's getting paid good money. Because she gets out of bed in the morning, she goes straight to her computer, she gives the company more time than if she had to travel to the office. Look, there are a lot of podcasts out there. I'm in a crowded field. And I always thank my supporters, and I always urge them to share, because this is real talk. There are a lot of podcasts with a lot of gimmicks and a lot of, not only gimmicks, I don't want to put anybody's, I'm not putting anybody's podcast down. I'm saying they focus on, you know, you have different things, cooking and these, all these things, and those are fantastic. I chose to go after real world issues with real conversations with real people. And I know a lot of times, even when my listeners who give me feedback, so I know that they're listening, that when you're done listening to the podcast, you just, you know, whatever app you're using, you click it off and you're waiting for the next one. I'm asking you, for the sake of forward movement, for the sake of making a change in this world, to keep sharing this podcast, okay? Not for, and understand, even as it stands right now, and this is my truth, I don't have a sponsor. I don't have a sponsor, not because I haven't had the opportunity to have a sponsor, but because I don't want any. It's hard to find a sponsor who is not going to start putting up limits as to what can be said in your podcast and who you can have and what the boundaries are. And the minute we start doing that, there's no more real talk. This is organic real talk. And I need you to do your best to share it with the next 10 people on your Facebook, your Instagram, whatever. Get people interested in the conversation. Have more people hold our government accountable. In 3.5 years or whatever, there's going to be another election. And all the candidates going to be up there telling us what the wonderful, I'm talking about the presidential election. And we as human beings have such short memories that we forget the things that we have suffered under. We look at all the wonderful promises they say they're going to do. Let's hold this administration accountable now. People who did not believe in previous administrations, what you do, you vote them out. But we're in the first year of this new administration. We can't go through three more years of broken promises or of people trying to figure out if they're going to keep their promises. We need COVID to be dealt with in a way that's proactive. We need people's health to be taken first. So we need we need especially governments and government agencies to have the ability to lead by example, to allow more remote working, to allow us to some level of confidence in our health so that we can continue to work and support our families and not put our families and our children at risk, especially those age groups that don't have a vaccine. And then even, you know, there's, I don't know how many of you follow boxing, but years ago, I used to follow it a lot. And there's a boxer named Oscar De La Hoya he was a boxing name promoter and he's pretty famous. So those of you who follow boxing, even maybe those who didn't, I've heard his name. And he recently decided to come out of retirement. And now I hear that the match was postponed because he's fully vaccinated and yet he got COVID. He got the Delta variant, even though he was fully vaccinated. And that's not the first story ever. I know people personally who have had COVID twice. This is not a joke. We are moving into an age where bugs are superbugs, where viruses are going to take more lives than they ever have before, where we have to be proactive and be one step ahead, or we're going to keep succumbing to, you know, in these numbers, 650,000+ people in the United States have died from COVID. Do the smart thing. Keep your businesses going. Keep the economies going. Keep the infrastructure, all the things that are needed for life going. Come up with good solutions for businesses that end up in neighborhoods now that are less populated because there's more remote working, and figure out maybe, like I said, maybe you give them the opportunity and a grant or whatever to relocate to neighborhoods now that become more consistent population because people are working from home. So they're, you know, you still got to go to the grocery store. You still got to go to shopping. You still might decide to run out and get a sandwich. You still, you know, and then the businesses too have to have their own challenge of reinventing their own businesses to provide products that we need. That's the whole concept of business. But hold this administration accountable now for COVID. Hold the administration accountable now for student loans. There is the rent moratorium. I get it. I've spoken about it. I understand that landlords, no matter how rich they are, they have a right to earn fair income for their properties. But the problem here is the government started, I think it was started, yeah, it was started in the previous administration, but they went in with a plan with the rent moratorium. They had no plan, no exit plan. And they're doing the same thing again. Now that they have no exit plan, they're just throwing it back on the people to survive. Like the extra unemployment, I think it was extra $300 a week or whatever people were getting that just ended, I think, this past Sunday. Okay, you understand it had to come to an end. But did you take the time while it was going on to look at the impact? Did you take the time to offer solutions to families where both mother and father died, both breadwinners died, and you know, there's now one person, adult child, or let's call them an adult child, taking care of all the younger children because all, you know, the whole head of the family's been wiped out, and the head of the family, the families who or the people who were taking care that mother and father maybe were on unemployment and were getting that $300. And now, you know, I mean, I'm just bringing up these different scenarios. But the point is, did you do a study? Did you try to understand what the impact would be when you pull the safety net out from under people? When you pull the unemployment extra money because of a pandemic, not a normal situation now. We can't look at things and put them in a normal sense because there's nothing normal about this pandemic. Did you figure that out? The rent moratorium, did you figure that out? The student loan postponement, did you figure that out? When you pulled the safety net, did you understand that you'd be leaving most of the people dangling because there's been nothing in the interim to put them back to a position of being able to stand on their own 2 feet? We got a catastrophe coming in this country, an epidemic of pain. Unless our leaders step up and decide that they're going to make a difference, that they're going to break the norm of Democrat and Republican, are they going to break the norm of hating you just because of affiliation with party or disagreeing with you just because you're affiliated with a party? That they're going to decide that whether they're reelected or not, while they're in office, they're going to do the greatest service that they can to man. And if they do the greatest service to man, they'll be doing the greatest service to God. For these people who protect us, who make laws that we live by, there is something biblical about that leadership. I pray that my words stir some emotion up in someone who can make a difference, who decides they're not left or right, they're not black or white, they're not Republican or Democrat, they're human. And when we start doing that in numbers, oh, what a difference we'll make. Until the next time and the next episode of In the News, I thank you for listening. I want to say a very special thank you once again to my listeners for allowing me to come into your homes and your cell phones and your apps, wherever you are, and to share my thoughts and perspectives with you on this very special opportunity, that opportunity that I take to be very special. I thank you once again for your continued and endless support in making this podcast a success. I remind you, you can listen to this episode and any of my episodes on your favorite podcast app. If you'd like to leave me a message, if you'd like to be a guest in the show, you can send me an email at podcast@247realtalk.net. That's podcast@247realtalk.net. Until the next time, take care of yourselves and each other.